2020 has been a year unlike any other. We sit down with small town reporters at a roundtable to discuss the future of journalism on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating nearly 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, November 27 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Kay Henderson.
2020 has been quite a year for news, a pandemic, a derecho, a pivotal election. We're going to go hyper-local today and talk about local radio and newspapers in these challenging times. Joining us today are Doug Burns, co-owner of the Carroll Daily Times-Herald. Bob Leonard is news director for radio stations KNIA and KLRS. Ty Rushing is managing editor at the Northwest Iowa Review. And Art Cullen is editor of the Storm Lake Times. Gentlemen, before we get started talking about the business end of journalism, let's start with you, Bob. Why do you do this? Why are you here?
Well, because I like telling stories, and I like helping, even more importantly, I like helping people tell their stories. I like to elevate people and make them the most important person in town for a little bit. And I like telling the people what matters in their community so that they're better citizens, better informed, so they make better decisions and they spend local and contribute to our local economies.
Doug, what keeps you involved?
Well, it's a privilege. It's also very humbling to be a storyteller. So I always say we're there to celebrate people's successes, and we're there to give them a hand up when they're struggling. So I like doing stories on people's aspirations. You know, we get a lot of people think that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, and we're always after those negative stories. What I really enjoy writing is when you have somebody who's, you know, worked at Hy-Vee for 50 years and they're retiring, or we have a front page story in today's paper about a local barber who's been around for about 50 years. And those are the stories that like really uplift our community and give us the kind of trust to tell the hard stories.
Ty, what about you?
I love writing, I love meeting new people, I love adventure, and this is kind of like, this job is the perfect way to combine all three of those things. And I just enjoy that, and plus I get a rush out of like beating my competition to a good story or dropping a bombshell or something like that. And I also really, really enjoy covering public meetings, which no one ever says, but it's true.
Art?
Well, I came of age in college during the post-Watergate era, and so my heroes were Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward. And the reason I got into journalism is because I thought I could really make a difference, and I think we have.
Gentlemen, COVID, the age of, how has that impacted the industry, Doug?
Well, it's been devastating because, you know, we're still, as we'll get to later, I think our industry is going to move more toward a nonprofit model. You're seeing that in Seattle, and Art and I are working on a Western Iowa Journalism Foundation. But as of now, as we're sitting at this table, we still are, you know, driven by advertising and subscriber revenue, and COVID has wiped out a lot of our advertising base.
In a minute, we'll get to the OBIT section for newspapers on the program. But Bob, radio stations, they don't give up licenses, and The radio landscape in Iowa is pretty static, isn't it?
Well, I'm not privy to the finances of the station, but I do know that our ownership and our management has given us their vote of support, their vote of confidence. They just want us to go out and do our jobs, and we're doing them to the best of our ability. And I'm sure there's been some kind of a hit, but we don't have any layoffs, and we're just out there doing the same thing that we always do. And, you know, there's been some consequences having no sports. Sports is a big deal for us, and as you know, but...
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's been a hit, but we're just working. The sports guys in particular have been very creative, doing all kinds of different features that they probably would have never have done before. So this has sort of sent them a different direction, and it's a good direction, too. It'll be nice when we're back to normal with all the kids, but they've done a great job.
Art, how is Abnormal going for your enterprise?
Well, when the shutdown first began, my brother, who's the founder of the newspaper, and I got together, and we were losing $5,000 to $7,000 a month, and we just said, should we shut it down? And we were very seriously considering that for about 15 minutes, and then we heard about the PPP program, and that saved us. And something really funny happened about July and August. We started seeing really big gains in circulation revenue, a 50% increase in circulation revenue. During the pandemic, people were turning to our website for accurate information. And I have a little hope now that we can make it on reader revenue. I didn't feel that way 7 months ago at all. I thought it was the end.
Ty, what about your organization? There's some Pew research out there that shows 74% of people recently surveyed think that the news business is profitable, but only 14% of those who were surveyed actually pay for the news.
Right. No, that's interesting. I mean, because like I try to keep myself out of the financial end of the business, and you know we have a healthy wall between news and ads. But you know, part of my job is monitoring our digital traffic, and we're approaching 5 million page views this year. And we only really started pushing web content in 2016. And for that year, we had 435,000 page views for the entire year. So approaching 5 million this year, and that's going to break our record that we set last year, and it's going to break the record that was set before that, and so on and so on. I'm seeing a lot of traffic that way. But at the same time, I know our print circulation hasn't dropped. At its peak, the review had more than 6,000 subscribers, but we're remaining above 5,000. So it's a blessing.
According to the Poynter Institute, since 2004, 1,800 newspapers have closed. 1,700 of them are weeklies. What's the business model, Doug? Do you publish weekly and then push stuff online digitally? Do you publish every other day? Do you publish a weekend? I mean, what's the new business model out there that you see as being the best to serve local?
So, like you, I grew up in Iowa and I watched the farm crisis. And when I was a teenager, and you would hear these stories about legacy farms and their owners committing suicide, I was sort of wondering, like, why would that happen? Why would somebody get into that desperate of a situation? And then, to be honest, I found myself there. We've owned the business for 100 years, and we were a daily paper, and we were hemorrhaging money, and we had to go from a daily paper to 2 days a week, and as Art mentioned, you know, we've struggled, but you know, we've been working with the Facebook Journalism Project on boosting our digital subscriptions, and that's been going well. And then I think going forward, the model, I don't think that the advertising and subscription model will sustain most papers. I think we really have to move into creating nonprofit streams. That's happened elsewhere. We're trying to be on the vanguard of that here. But, I mean, to have to take a daily paper to 2 days a week and to wonder if the family business that you love, I have my picture of my grandfather, my uncle on the wall, and to think that it's going to collapse under your leadership is just heartbreaking. And I apologize for the condescending thoughts I had about farmers who couldn't make it through the farm crisis when I was a teenager.
Art, this nonprofit model, do you think it's the future?
It has to be, because we are not the advertising middleman anymore, and it's coming to radio too and TV. It just hasn't hit as hard there yet. So Doug and I have been working for about the last year or so on trying to set up a foundation for our two family-owned newspapers, essentially, that would solicit donations. Without it, I'm not convinced that we can survive. It appears that we can float the boat temporarily the way we're going, but ultimately we're going to have to adopt the PBS model.
The Poynter Institute has a list of newspapers that have closed this year, and they argue it's because of the pandemic. It just pushed the business model to the point that newspapers couldn't continue operating. And I'll just read these because, you know, some of our viewers may have been longtime subscribers to these newspapers and miss seeing that masthead land in their mailbox. The Sun in New Sharon has closed. The Tama News Herald and the Toledo Chronicle have merged. The Gladbrook Northern Sun, what a great name, and the Rhinebeck Courier now have merged, and they are the Sun Courier. The Trayer Star Clipper and the Dysart Reporter are now the North Tama Telegraph. The Kyoto Eagle and the News Review in Sigourney have merged. And this one got a little bit of statewide attention. The Daily Iowegian in Centerville, that was launched in 1864, has merged and is now, I guess, managed by the Ottumwa Courier. Now, I'm going to mention a couple that are in your neck of the woods, Bob. The Oskaloosa newspaper has absorbed the Pella Chronicle and the Knoxville Journal. And let me just say about the Knoxville Journal, it was founded by a Civil War hero named William Milo Stone, who was a friend of Abraham Lincoln's, and he became the governor of Iowa. What has been the talk of the town now that those two newspapers and communities that you serve are now part of the Oskaloosa enterprise?
Well, people are trying to recover. The avid newspaper readers, those are great towns, Knoxville and Pella, Oskaloosa, they're great towns. They all deserve fine newspapers. Part of the problem with those papers was the lack of local ownership, and that they worked their people to the bone. You can only do so much as one person, and it's just when you don't live it, when ownership isn't in the community, doesn't care about the community, then it's tough to survive. And the, you know, some of the reporters, you know, were very good. There's one young lady who's really good, and she's trying to cover Oskaloosa, Knoxville, and Pella, and it's impossible. And I don't know if you know that from headquarters in Alabama or wherever they are, Arkansas, but it's a tough bind. And they've gone through a number of reporters, a number of editors, and they're all rode hard and put away wet. And it's just tough life, tougher than most people can handle.
Gentlemen, there are a couple of newspapers in Iowa that are doing things that aren't necessarily newspapering. Doug, they're owning other companies. They're buying other companies that can be profit centers, or they're using one side of the business to help local businesses write news releases. I mean, what's the prospect of becoming a newspaper that has ownership stakes in other kinds of businesses as a way to support the newspaper?
So we've taken steps in that direction. We created a company called Mercury Boost Media Marketing Solutions. So we would get no's from people about print or online ads. Now we're able to sell digital advertising, Facebook, social media advertising as a separate company. I also represent the Iowa Newspaper Association on political ads with all 252 newspapers. And, you know, any revenue we derive from that goes to support our newsroom. But I saw my good friend Art shaking his head. The problem, if you diversify like that, at some point, the non-newspaper revenue will be that'll be the successful part of your business. And if you're gonna diversify, you know, honestly, and your mission is just to make money, you might as well get out. I'm motivated to bring money into the business to keep our newspaper alive, because I know what happens in rural areas when they become news deserts, and the toxicity and dystopian atmosphere of Facebook just consumes a community from the inside. So I'm going to do everything I can to keep our paper open, and yeah, that means some side businesses. But Art, I'm sure you'll talk to him next about it. But he's right, to just go in that direction completely defeats the purpose of the main mission of what we do.
Art.
Well, I go back, I'm too old, but I go back to Gardner Coles, the former owner of the Des Moines Register many years ago, and was a fantastic newspaper, and he just believed a newspaper business was newspapering. And that's what, because you get into something else, and it creates conflicts for you, it distracts you from your mission. And so we've got, little newspapers, I always had job printing shops, print envelopes and letterheads and so on. That business has gone away. You can't sell wedding invitations anymore. That business has gone away. So we've just got to stick to newspapers. I don't know that cleaning out hog houses on weekends is going to help me be a better newspaper man. So we need to stick to our knitting. And I don't begrudge Doug or anybody else doing that. It's just my opinion is the Storm Lake Times is all I care about. And that's what I'm going to stick with.
Ty, you're a native of the Kansas City metro,
right,
and you have chosen to live in Northwest Iowa. What advice can you give to folks in this industry who are trying to recruit people to make this a career?
Basically, you got to explain community journalism to them. I didn't know a thing about community journalism. I didn't know there was a such thing as weekly newspapers when I was in Kansas City. I grew up reading the Kansas City Star. That's still my favorite paper, like, despite being in charge of several.
No offense to these folks.
No, yeah, and I love these guys. I get their papers as well, but the Kansas City Star is like, that's my hometown paper, so it has a special place in my heart. But we really got to talk, like, journalism professors really got to explain the opportunities that come about in community journalism. And fortunately, I've been able to talk to a couple of college classes at UNI, Morningside, University of Iowa, and Iowa State in the last couple of months. And I've told those kids about some of the adventures I get to have and some of the fun things I get to do and all the cool things you get to do while working for a community newspaper and also being a part of that community. And so we need to enlighten them about those opportunities, because coming out of college, man, I thought if you didn't go to the New York Times or the LA Tribune or anything, or the LA Times or the Chicago Tribune, you know, you weren't doing anything great. And that's a lie. Like, you can find a great news story anywhere. It doesn't just have to be in those, you know, flagship, major, well-known publications. You can go to the Sheldon Mel Sun and write great stories and cover meetings and make an impact.
I'll tell a little tale on a person who often sits in this chair and isn't here today. But I once covered a meeting in the Iowa State House and the Iowa Legislature and came out and ran into David Yepsen, and he said, "So what are you doing today?" And I explained that I had covered this meeting and what had happened, and his reply was, "Oh, meeting journalism. But you really like covering the city council."
I do.
Why?
It's very entertaining. I mean, not only is it very entertaining, but it's very informative. I learn so much about what's happening in Sheldon just from hearing the different perspectives of the different councilmen and the different representatives and the city manager and the city clerk and the public works director and the community development director, because they all share about what's happening in their little slice of town. Then you got people coming in with the public comments, and you hear about what's happening elsewhere. You can kind of understand what the issues are, so that way I can learn about these issues so I can write about them properly and talk to other people and find out about them and find out why there are issues, what the city's going to do about them and things like that. And so it's a great way to learn about exactly what's happening in your community and to stay informed. And it's my job to help people, you know, be informed and know what's happening in their community. So by being there, being that fly on the wall, I get to report that information and share it and keep my readers informed. I mean, I tweet the meetings live on Twitter, and I got a big following outside of Sheldon who are people who are invested in this meeting. Like, I have friends from Sioux City tell me all the time, like, I know more about what's happening with your council than I do with our own. And that's a huge compliment to me, just because, you know, I found a way to talk about a council meeting, which, you know, most people would be like, oh, that's boring. But it's somehow both informative and entertaining to them. And so that's a huge compliment.
Bob, what's the most obscure meeting you've ever covered, and what did it yield?
Most obscure meeting?
Do you share his view about the excitement of covering city council?
I do, in a sort of a different way, because I like watching the faces and mannerisms of the different council men and women and try to figure out what's really going on behind the scenes and who's mad at each other, who's upset, that, you know, the personal drama there. But I mean, there's some things that are pretty mundane, but just because my attitude is, just because it might seem mundane to me doesn't mean it is. It means that I probably haven't intellectualized the issue enough. I don't know enough, and so I've got to figure it out and why it is important, because if it wasn't important, it wouldn't be on the agenda.
Speaking of not knowing enough, there's a discussion in our industry about media literacy. What role does local media, radio and newspaper, play in explaining media to the electorate?
Well, we started a program called a Sustainable Partnership, where we've worked with two local schools, and we have a business in the community that's providing digital and regular subscriptions to students who are in social studies and history classes. So we have a big role to explain that, you know, anything that comes through my newspaper is vetted, and it's professionally gathered. We've also been much more aggressive in putting our information out online. Again, when you go into the fever swamp of Facebook in our community, I would like to think that, like, we're sort of the only beacon of reason and the only source that people can go to where there's still that, like, community square of trust, and there's common truth. I think we're really the only people who can project common truth into public discussion in our region. So it's a big responsibility. We're doing it by, again, reaching out to the schools and by aggressively using social media and explaining to our readers when they have a question about a story or when they complain about a story, you know, very, very politely and thoroughly, like, answering those concerns.
Art, I know very few people who are younger than I am that subscribe to a newspaper,
right?
And most of them are in the industry. What happens when the folks who do subscribe age out? Is there a digital model for this that is just going to have to figure out its way?
Yes, and that's what we're in the midst of right now. We just launched a new website today at www.stormlake.com, and
do we charge for that commercial, folks?
Yeah, we'll send you a donation later during Pledge Week. Young people, if you go to a hotel or an airport, not just young people, but old people too, and I haven't been to a hotel and an airport in 7 months, but nobody is reading a print publication. They're all staring into their cell phones. And so obviously, we have to be a digital product. And my brother and I, John is over 70 and I'm 63, and we're old Luddites, and we love printed newspapers. I used to run our press, and we love the smell of ink, and but I'm afraid the print publication is not long for this world, frankly, and we're going to have to make that transition to digital.
Gentlemen, we're almost out of time. We have just a couple minutes left and, you know, a bunch of geeky news people sitting around. And let's just do something more entertaining than talking about the decline in the industry. Ty, is there a masthead out there, a newspaper name that you have wished you worked for?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, the Northwest Iowa Review is a pretty, pretty sweet name. And then, like, you know, we're very much about the NWest style, you know, for the branding. And so, like, a lot of people give me flack about that because it's like, oh, I'm never going to get used to the NWest. I'm like, well, they're paying me to say NWest, so I'm going to say NWest. But,
well,
yeah.
I got my start in journalism at the Lenox Timetable. Are there any mastheads out there that you look at, Doug, and you say,
so
gosh?
So when I was at school at Northwestern University in Evanston, I always thought it'd be great to work for the New Orleans Times-Picayune.
Yeah.
Art?
So.
Well, one of those newspapers that died was the Youngstown Vindicator in Youngstown, Ohio. And I'm always seeking to be vindicated. So I think that would, if I could change the flag of the times to something else, it would be the Vindicator.
Bob, I always thought it was sad that WOW in Omaha gave up those call letters. Any call letters out there that you recall that you thought, man, I love those call letters. I wish I could work there.
Boy, I don't know. I love WNYC. I mean, what an incredible station. I mean, I like that. I was a kid who had a shortwave radio. And I used to listen to it at night when nobody thought I was. And I used to listen to Radio Japan. And that was listening to Radio Japan was incredible. I listened to a naturalist walk up Mount Fuji and tell me a different story about plants, people, and cultures every night. And that was just fascinating to me. So a lot of the things from overseas I just still love.
Okay. Well, we hope that our viewers and listeners at home loved this conversation that we just had. On behalf of all the folks at Iowa PBS, thanks for joining us and follow us online.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Iowa PBS is supported in part by Wells Fargo. Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.